In 1983, Graeme Swift was named one of Britain's best young novelists by Granta magazine, along with contemporaries like Martin Amis, Ian McEwan and Julian Barnes, amongst others. He went on to win the Booker Prize for his novel Last Orders in 1996, and he has just published England and Other Stories, his first collection of short stories in over 30 years, and Graeme Swift joins me now. Graeme, there are 25 stories in this collection, all grouped together under the loose subject heading of England. Did you always have this in mind as your sort of overarching subject when writing these stories?
Not from the very start, but it came to me quite quickly. As you've mentioned in your introduction, I hadn't written any stories for a long time. I seem to have become a novelist. Short stories were what I began my writing career with, and at that time I was perfectly happy just to write them. I think the short story is a great form. And with after every novel, I've always sort of thought it would be nice to go back to writing short stories, but they didn't happen until very recently. But they came in a very thick and fast and furious way. I would be writing one, and then another one or two would be looming up. And as I was writing them, I did start to feel that somehow what I was doing was working towards some kind of single enterprise, that certainly all the stories would be for a book. They weren't going to be scattered stories published individually. And it gradually dawned on me that the nature of this enterprise was some kind of vision of England, that all the stories would be in some way bits of England or even different Englands. But I wouldn't pretend in any way that the vision is comprehensive and definitive, because I think that's in the nature of England itself. It's a very hard thing to define.
One of the traits that people associate with your writing is the importance of humour, I suppose, on the pages. Was this something that you were very aware of when you sat down to tackle this big topic?
Yes, although I think that's just me. That's just my natural approach to writing. I think there's quite a lot of comedy in it. Even when it's dealing with quite painful and dark material, there is comedy. And I would say there's scarcely a page of this book which doesn't have at least some flicker of humour in it.
Now, each of the stories seems to take maybe an overwhelming emotion that people feel in the most mundane of everyday scenarios. For you, is that sort of the reality of human experience summed up? I mean, I'm thinking of stories like the knife story here, the story of the 12-year-old boy in his kitchen, having this extraordinary coming-of-age moment, but it's done so quietly and nobody even notices. Maybe talk a little bit about that story and how it fits into the broader context of the book.
Well, as you say, that's a story about a 12-year-old boy who is poised in his kitchen, or his mother's kitchen. It's a strong mother-son story as well. About to take a knife, an ordinary kitchen knife, from the kitchen drawer, but obviously with some further purpose in mind. It's obviously a very significant a moment for him. And it's perhaps one of many stories in the book which does reflect that. How can I put it? Beneath the surface of the green and pleasant land, there is quite a lot of violence and anger and hostility going on. It's simply there, and one reads about it in the papers. I mean, this book is not necessarily a pretty version of England, but I think it's quite an honest and realistic one.
But then we move to a story like I Live Alone, and in this we are bearing witness to a man being given a terminal diagnosis, and then him very quietly and gently returning to the office and not telling anyone. A complete contrast of experience in Knife, and yet, again, under this umbrella of England.
Yes, well, that's, if you like, that's at the other end of things, isn't it? You've got the 12-year-old boy, and you've got this man who is quite literally now very near the end of his life, and this has just been announced to him. But it's a story in which his past life comes back to him very vividly. And I think it's a story also about something which features a lot throughout the book, and that is simply the body. What comes back to him and what is still there with him is very much his own body. And there are lots of bodies of one kind or another in this a collection, including, of course, some dead bodies. Yeah, I'm fundamentally interested as a writer in the stuff that goes on inside us, which of course means the mental world inside us, our passions, our motives, and so on. But I wouldn't for one moment want to divorce that from our bodies, and I'm as interested as any scientist or philosopher in the mystery of how the body and the mind link to each other.
Well, this leads us on then maybe to refer to a story like Fuseli, where it's a man doing quite a mundane thing, walking around a supermarket, and yet he's right in the middle of that experience. His son's body is actually miles away, lying in a mortuary, and he's having to rationalise quite a boring job going to the supermarket with these enormous emotions that he's experiencing.
Yeah, well, I do try to find in, you know, the ordinary surface of things, including some banal things like going to the supermarket, some kind of route to, how can I put it, to the depths. I mean, this is a story about the depths of this man, the depths of his grief and his wife's grief, and yet it is linked to something as banal as not just being in a supermarket, but in the case of this story, buying a particular kind of dried pasta.
Another story that really stood out, I think, was the barbershop story, because you take the perspective of Vangeli the barber and how it's a very ordinary life, but that there's this weird intimacy between a barber and a customer. And you have this moment where you talk about at the end of each encounter, the barber and the customer look in the mirror together and almost are reflected back as if they're a pair for that, you know, heartbeat of a beat. And the barber taps the customer on the shoulder as if to say, now you're done, you're new, you're ready to go back out into the world. Yes. Again, to find the emotion in that very ordinary experience was so interesting to read.
Yes, well, it's the same sort of thing, but there is a lot going on in that story. And I think there is the sense of whole lives being there, particularly the life of the barber himself, who is originally from Cyprus and has made his home in England and is now, you know, a man in his 60s. And you get a sense of his whole life being bound up in this constantly repeated business of giving people haircuts, and a sense of how he, through that, sees other people, not just sees, but perceives other people. He sees the way that they look into the barbershop mirror, and that tells him all kinds of things about them. He's in many ways a quite perspicacious character.
The sort of cliches we might have as Irish readers coming to this book about English people is things like that they're very polite and they can be very kind of quiet, and public displays of emotion aren't something that we associate with them, maybe coy about sexual matters. This is all territory that you delve right into. There's an awful lot about different relationships, sex, sexuality explored in all its forms, ugly and beautiful. Was this something you were very keen to explore, or is it something you don't even know that you're acknowledging?
It wasn't a sort of program, it wasn't an agenda, but I think I wanted there to be a diversity and variety in the book. And after all, it is true that England itself is a diversity, it is a mixture, it is, it's a small country with a big but very mixed, loose population, a very elastic country, a very hard country to pin down. And I think all the stories reflect that.
England and Other Stories by Graham Swift is published by Simon & Schuster.